ॐ विदितुं सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So we are now studying the chapter Strength of Emotions. Now in this, so far I think we have covered the topic up to love or even kindness we have completed. Shweta, do you know?
Yes,
Yes.
good. We
We've
finished
done
the kindness.
kindness.
Haven't started pity.
Yeah.
You have to start pity. Okay. So, first of all, what he's trying to say here is, you are a human being only if you have emotions. But at the same time, as a human being, you should have these emotions under your control. In other words, emotions should always be underlined by buddhi, intellect. So you're a perfect human being to the extent your emotions are under the control of your buddhi, intellect. So he discusses few emotions here and explains to us as to how to convert them from being weakness to strength. Today, you find a set of people having no emotions whatsoever. Very indifferent. Cold. Very, very cold. Whereas quite a lot of people are having emotions, but they are overpowered by emotions. They are not able to keep their emotions under control. Their emotions are not governed by their buddhi, their intellect. So therefore, the emotions become a weakness in them rather than being strength. So he talks about various facets of emotions. Which ones are weakness? How to convert them into strength? So in that context, we have seen the emotion called love first. Now, this word love is very often spoken, expressed by people to each other, but hardly anyone understands what love is. In the world today, love is actually misunderstood. They take attachment to be love. What is the difference between attachment and love? First of all, what is love? Love is nothing but a feeling of oneness, identification. Love is nothing but a feeling of oneness, identification. You identify with the other person. What pains that person pains you. What gives pleasure to that person gives you pleasure. What is good for them is good for you. What is bad for them is bad for you. You have identified with them totally. That is what is called love, a feeling of oneness. What is attachment? Completely opposite. A feeling of minus. Minus, mindness. That is attachment. Love is universal. Attachment is preferential. Love is unconditional. Attachment is conditional. To the extent a person is catering to me, either directly or indirectly, to that extent I claim to love that person. The day I see that the catering is stopped, then I start hating that person. So all along, when I've been claiming to love that person, I've actually been loving only myself. So, attachment is polluted love. When love is polluted with selfishness, it is attachment. When you remove the selfishness from attachment, it becomes love. That's all. Love plus selfishness is equal to attachment. Attachment minus selfishness equals love. So it is conditional, preferential, and it creates disharmony, agitation. You know, all that happens when you have attachment. It binds you. There is, you know, somebody is catering to you. So you say, I like that person, I love that person. And you do not want that catering to stop. So there's a kind of a bondage. You tend to please that person for the catering to continue. And if that person is also attached to you, he will or she will also start pleasing. So there is a constant pressure on you not to lose it, you know. And you may go out of your nature to please somebody else. So it's a clear case of, you know, bondage. Whereas in the case of love, it's freedom. You love a person for what he or she is. It's a complete acceptance as it is. A person as it is. See, we are talking about feeling. Now, the feeling of love you have with reference to animals in the jungle, in the zoo, even to a tiger, you have feeling of love. But you may not get closer to the tiger while you may get closer to the deer. You have love for the deer as well and the tiger as well. But with reference to the tiger, you don't get closer. But with reference to the deer, you may get closer. Similarly, the feeling of oneness need not be restricted. But once you understand the gunas of a person, you may relate with that person differently using your buddhi. But the feeling will always be love. Whereas in attachment, it's different. You know? So you lose that freedom. You don't have to put on an act. You can just be yourself. But when you're in a relationship out of attachment, you tend to lose yourself. It's so much of pressure and strain on that relationship. You feel very uncomfortable. You are very uncomfortable with it, and you're afraid of leaving it also. That is called bondage. Whereas in love, there is no such thing. You are absolutely free. So all this he discussed here. That's why he said, when you are attached, you call it as you have fallen in love. When you're detached, which is true love, you will be rising in love, not falling in love. See, when you are in love, you allow the person to be himself or herself. But when you are in attachment, that is not possible. So therefore, you've got to convert your emotion from being attachment to love. How do you do that? How do you develop love? How do you overcome attachment? Anybody?
I didn't understand the question, Guruji. Sorry.
How do you develop love? Move from attachment to love?
Acceptance?
How does that come?
If you lose your, like, me and mine, and you develop, like, you
Acceptance.
identify with everyone as a.
How do you expect that to happen?
Dropping expectations from the other person.
How will that happen?
When you accept the person for whatever or whoever
How?
it is.
Identifying with the whole, no? Identifying with.
See, love will come. Today, for example, why is your love so restricted? Why is that boundary is only the family and not beyond? Because you say, this son is born through me, the daughter is born through me, I am born through my parents, and the siblings also came from the same parents. So there is some sort of a common denominator you are seeing. And when you are approaching life with your senses and mind or an underdeveloped intellect, the boundary to which you can see the common denominator will always be restricted. But when you probe through the shastras and begin to understand more and more about your personality and everybody else, then you begin to see the Atma in every being as one and the same. The more you begin to understand about the center of every being, then you break the boundary and the boundary starts expanding. You understand? So love comes out of knowledge, out of understanding, out of developing the intellect. When you develop the intellect, you question the obvious. You know, the eyes can only see up to the same kind of look and feature. Oh, we are all Indians. we speak the same language, you know, like that, some maximum only this much it can go. But when you start using the intellect, you start going deeper and deeper. Then with your subtle intellect, you begin to understand that every one of us are essentially Atma, the divinity. And it is because of the prakriti, the gunas, that we are different. And a person is behaving in a particular way because of the gunas. He is not able to control his gunas. He is ignorant. Therefore, he is functioning like this. So exactly like you see a tiger, you say, "Arey, the tiger has such a nature." It is controlled by its nature to be ferocious. Therefore, you still, in spite of that quality of being ferocious, you love that type. You may not get closer to it from the practical point of view. That is different. But the feeling is love. Similarly, when you begin to understand about the individual, the human beings, the other species, the more and more you get to know about them in detail, you begin to have love for other species also. You know, the boundary starts breaking. You know, in the beginning your attachment is maximum to family. Then maybe community. Then maybe country. Then maybe humanity. But with reference to animals, you don't care what kind of torture you will, you are ready to give to them. You know, just to flaunt your ego, vanity. There are, you know, all kinds of things we do to the animals. We take their fur, that we do all kinds of things while we could do easily without all that. But it doesn't even bother some people. You understand? We are not sitting in judgment of that, but we are just saying, we are studying this, we need to understand why is it that it affects some people? Why they say, "Arey, I don't want." Why? They understand that, "Arey, why should I, for my pleasure, get other species to go through certain difficulties? If it is possible to do away with that kind of a behavior, why can't I live like that?" How did that come about? With understanding, with knowledge. So the more and more you expose yourself to the higher knowledge, you get closer and closer to the center. And in the center, there is only the divinity. When your attention is more and more on the periphery, you will be more insecure, attached, etc. Conniving, you know, destructive, all that. As you start moving closer and closer to the center, you develop more and more love. That's the idea. So, with this knowledge, with this understanding, which you get out of reflection, you begin to expand your horizon of identification. You will clearly be understanding that my obligation may be with my family or with certain, in certain areas. But my obligation need not be to all my neighbors also. In all areas, certain areas maybe, but not in all areas. Like you have an obligation to, you know, pay for your children's school fees. You do not have an obligation to pay for your neighbor's school fees. But if you have something extra, you don't mind when they are in need, you know. So you are very clear in your head. There is this feeling which need not be restricted. And it won't be restricted because it is seen from that angle. And you will see the differences. And I have what to do, this fellow has this nature. So like this only he will behave. So with that nature, you have accepted that person. That doesn't mean you don't take corrective actions when you need to. You understand? But inside there is no feeling of hatred towards that person. So when you have such love, automatically you will be kind to that person because you are seeing that person as yourself. So obviously you will be kind to yourself. But kindness doesn't mean pleasing. Kindness means you want to do what is good. Isn't it? That is real kindness. Supposing your child is suffering from, you know, heavy fever, high fever. and you take the child to the doctor, and the doctor says, we have to give her injection. And she says, no, I don't want injection. It will be painful. Now you are very kind. Oh, doctor, leave it. No need to give injection. Will you say that? You have to be strict with her and say, listen, nothing doing. You have to go through this. I know it will be painful, but this is good for you. In that situation, that is kindness. So it's not an act of kindness. It's a feeling. So ahimsa is highly misunderstood. They take ahimsa to be physically also not injuring somebody. Of course, you won't unnecessarily hurt anybody physically. But that doesn't mean you become incapacitated to hurt somebody physically. Supposing you are the judge and you have to give a verdict and it's proven beyond doubt that this person has done so much of crime and all that, and you won't say that I can't give you such punishment. You have to. Oh, it will be painful for him. Whether it's painful or not, you have to. In the interest of seeing if that person can be, if the person can be reformed. No. That's the reason, right? So therefore, kindness or ahimsa has also become weakness in a lot of people. They take non-injury to be literal. And as a result, they themselves suffer. So he gives that example, in many places he talks about it. He says, the invaders, when they invaded this country, they knew that we had certain feelings towards cows. We will not kill them. So they fenced themselves with cows and they'll shoot from behind. We won't attack them back because we'll have to kill the cows. But after taking control over our country, they started destroying more and more cows. This is not, we should not be sitting and blaming them, we should be blaming us. It is because of our weakness. The emotion itself should not become a weakness. This is the problem. This we need to understand. So therefore he says, when you have love, obviously you will have kindness. But it won't be a weakness. It will be a strength, pillar of strength. Why? It will be directed by the intellect. Emotion is fine. But when it comes to manifestation, you have to direct it using the buddhi. You cannot blindly manifest. Then it will become a weakness. That's what he's been saying. And then he gives the example of Mahabharata and all that. So many situations he gives. The Pandavas are taking pity, especially this Arjuna. Then how can we kill them? Should not kill them. This is all not true ahimsa. A fellow is interested in the kingdom. He is a Kshatriya. And it, unrighteously it's been taken away. And a lot of atrocities have been committed. And then as a Kshatriya, if you don't fight against it, it is only showing that you are weak and not strong. So that is what he's trying to say here. So Shakespeare quotes to, sometimes you have to be cruel only to be kind. The most important word here is sometimes. Sometimes one has to be cruel to be kind. Not all the time. Some situation comes where you might have to take up weapons. You might have to be firm. Somebody is asking for money to use it for drugs. Knowingly will you give? Say love. Very kind. I can't say no to them. That only shows that you are weak. So in love, what pleases the other person pleases you. Meaning, what is good for that person is good for you. You will only be doing what is good in the interest of that person. Because in love, you are interested in the growth, not in the downfall. You are interested in the rise, not in the fall. You are interested in freedom, not in bondage. So therefore, all this you develop with the strength of intellect. By gaining the knowledge of the self, by gaining the knowledge of your true identity. The more and more you begin to understand about yourself and everyone, then you develop love for every being. Then you will cut through the caste, creed, color, community, sex, etc. Otherwise you won't, because your intellect is not strong enough to cut through these stupid obstacles. And when you develop the intellect, then it will be sharp enough to cut through this. So therefore, with understanding you develop love. And with love you will be able to understand more. Very interesting. They go hand in hand. Little bit of understanding, you develop love for the other person. With that love, you'll be able to understand that person even more. Continuing. The next topic, pity. Who will read? Anybody else want to take turn and read, or Shweta, you can go ahead and read. Shweta, you read.
Pity. Pity is a feeling of sympathy for the suffering of others, an impulse of sorrow for their misfortune, an immature emotion, a human weakness. Some people spend their life trying to please others. Consider it cruel to break another's heart. They yield to weak pity and torture themselves catering to others' feelings. You cannot live your life thus merely feeding others' emotions. Your character lies in upholding your intellect, conviction through your life's journey, and not letting yourself be victimized by weaker emotions.
So this word, weak pity, was coined by, I think, William Wordsworth first. Pity is a weakness, whereas compassion is strength. See, pity is an emotion that is expressed out of one's ego. Whereas compassion is an emotion that is naturally present in a being out of evolution to the height of self or closer to the self. So, for example, you are waiting for a bus in the bus station and somebody is coming and begging. You're seeing that person's situation and, you know, it hurts you, or he's suffering. And then you give some, you know, 5 rupees, 10 rupees, whatever. This is a weak emotion. Whereas the compassion would be naturally throughout, whether or not the situation presents and, you know, your ego is affected by that, you would naturally be compassionate to everybody. And there, you won't just see the external situation and whether your ego feels good about it or not. You see what is good for that person and do that action. That is called compassion. You understand? So he says, pity is a feeling of sympathy for the sufferings of others. See, this is because our feeling is not underlined by knowledge. Any suffering, whosoever it is because of that person's karma. But that doesn't mean you don't do any help. But you must understand, a person is going through certain difficulties, whether it's physical or mental, whatever it may be, it is because of each one's karma. Now, I am seeing that person suffering. Yes, definitely I want to help that person because you have compassion. But what kind of action I need to take to help that person, I will decide using my buddhi, not allow my mind to impulsively react. That impulsive reaction is called pity. That's all he's saying. An immature emotion. Surface emotion. Oh, no, this person is suffering. Okay, give 10 rupees. And people know that you have this weak pity. So they come and present themselves as suffering. and you give them 10 rupees, 20 rupees, they go and use it for drugs. The same people you give them food, they will say, no, I don't want food. So, what is actually happening is, you are not really concerned about that other people suffering. You are more worried about the emotion that comes out when you see that person suffering. So you just want to take care of that. So you feel happy, but you have given 10 rupees. That's all. That's called weak pity. You know. This is not coming from the depth. This is coming from the superficial layers. So it's more done to cater to your satisfaction than to the other person's need. That's why he calls it as an immature emotion, a human weakness. Some people spend their life trying to please others. Consider it cruel to break another's heart. Supposing you say no, oh, I'll be breaking their heart. How can I say no? So, you know, so I should not say no. I should give in. I should give in. This is weakness. There's some kind of a compulsion. You are not under control when you are expressing it. All this is a clear proof that, you know, you are not really controlling and governing that emotion. So he says, and torture themselves catering to others' feelings. You cannot live your life thus merely feeding others' emotions. The character lies in upholding your intellectual conviction to your life's journey. Not letting yourself be victimized by weaker emotions. So, pity arises out of ignorance. It is superficial. Whereas compassion arises out of knowledge. It is not superficial. It comes from the deeper layers of your personality. Continue.
This weakness stems from ignorance of the general plan of nature. The world is meticulously programmed by the principle of cause and effect. Every effect has a cause and cause has a cause and cause. Every effect has a cause and cause and effect. You reap what you sow. You get what you deserve, not what you desire. It is the law of action, the law of karma. When a pitiable scene confronts you, let your intellect assess it and control your surface emotion. Do not let your emotion cloud your intellectual judgment. Thus must you act with discretion. Your action then befits what the situation demands.
So, you must understand that everything is according to karma. Each one gets according to what they deserve. Now, when such a situation confronts, you observe your emotions, you observe the other person's condition and emotions, then you keep them aside, individually you assess and see how best and what best you can do to help the other person, and then you do, that is compassion. So you will naturally do. You won't say, "Arey, it's your karma, you deal with it." No. Whatever help you can do, you will do. Sometimes doing not any help is also good. You know, so you take the decision based on your buddhi, when you have compassion. If you have only that weak emotion, then you allow your immature emotion to dictate terms. You know, then you start expressing, "Oh, vichara, what to do, suffering, carrying it." So then you are being taken for a ride. Like I said, it is more to satisfy your ego. See, Jesus Christ says, "Iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it." Iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. So there will be all these kinds of situations depending upon each one's karma. There will be iniquity. Some people very rich, some people not so rich. some people going through some physical pain, some people not so much physical pain, maybe mental, maybe not mental. All these varieties of situations according to each one's karma, these iniquities, there will be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. So, if you have either directly or indirectly caused it, then you will have to face the wrath of that. So, when you have got the knowledge, then you will live your life in such a way that you will not be the cause of it either directly or indirectly. As much as possible, you won't cause the poverty of the other person by swindling their wealth or by swindling their work and then paying them very little. You know, you won't do all that. But out of their stupidity, they want to be indifferent, inactive. They do not want to act. They want to indulge, etc., etc. And therefore, they remain poor. That's what you can do about it. So even in such a situation, when such a situation confronts, you will see what is good and then do if you have compassion. You will still take necessary steps, but you won't allow your emotions to overpower your decisions. Otherwise, it is weak pity. Pity is weakness. Compassion is strength. Compassion is natural. It will always be there, not in only situation. So, your whole life, you will take actions keeping others in mind, not just yourself. A person with pity more often takes actions keeping himself in mind, and then when he sees somebody suffering, then temporarily he'll be feeling bad and then give 10 rupees, 20 rupees. It's not that I'm saying you should not give the 10 or 20. The point is, it is just to, you know, deal with that emotion for that moment. That's all. You're more concerned about dealing with an emotion for that moment than really seeing how to deal with such situations. What you can do to not be the cause of such creation, such situation. You know? So you become more and more conscientious when you live your life. That is out of compassion. Next, he talks about his charity. Continue, please.
Charity. A charitable disposition enriches life. You are rich by what you give. The only right you can claim in this world is to give. You may give wealth or service, feeling or knowledge. The spirit of giving provides you with the happiness you seek in the world. Nevertheless, you blunder in seeking happiness through asking, taking. Prayer and worship have been reduced to licensed beggary. People all over the world pray for success or progress, wealth or health, property or progeny. Their list of desires and demands is endless. They do not realize the futility of such prayer. No sooner the spirit of asking, taking enters you to destroy whatever little peace and happiness you possess. You are unaware that yourself is supreme. The kingdom of heaven lies within you. You are a monarch, no beggar. You need not ask for anything. You have everything. You have only to realize it. Realize that. And then develop the spirit of charity to share, to give.
So, first thing we need to understand is, giving enriches you. Taking only makes you poor. You are rich by what you give, not what you take. How do you understand this? I think in this discussion itself, we will explain that. It's a very interesting explanation Swami Ramtirtha gives, which I think Swamiji has given in this topic itself. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll talk about it. You know, you take the example of example from science, and he says the color of a cloth, he takes that and explains. He says that a cloth is known by the color blue. What has happened there is, all the seven colors, the zodiac colors, have impinged on that object, but that object reflected blue and kept all the other colors. And then it is known by the color it reflected. When an object takes everything without reflecting anything, it will be blue, it will be black in color. When an object reflects everything and doesn't take anything, it is known by the color white. So that is one of the reasons why we take white color clothes and wear it to remind us that life is to give, not to take. You are rich by what you give. That cloth is known by the color that it is reflected, not by the color it is absorbed. Similarly, you know, he says, therefore he explains and says, you are rich by what you give. Interesting thing is, whatever you are giving, you are risen about it. Whatever you are risen about will always be with you. Whatever you are attached will leave you and go. This is the law of life we need to understand. Attach you lose, detach you gain. You know, if you are constantly bothering somebody by calling, where are you going, what is happening, you have to report this thing, that they will leave you. So, the way to gain anything is to lose it. The way to lose anything is to be attached. So he says a charitable disposition enriches life. Because you become dispossessive about it. You become a trustee. A charitable person doesn't mean that, you know, mindlessly does charity. He's going to talk about all that. That person understands that it has been given to me. The opposite fellow thinks it's mine. So to the extent he thinks it's mine, it burdens that fellow. He loses the sleep. The possessiveness drops the quality of life from him. So a charitable disposition fellow, when he says, you know, charitable disposition enriches life. What is it that enriches life? The losing of possessiveness. Everything is Bhagavan's. You look at it emotionally, devotionally. You say everything belongs to God. It's been entrusted. I'm the trustee of it. So being the trustee, I need to, you know, use that carefully to help people. So of course I'll be using my buddhi. I won't just be, you know, distributing it. But that wealth, whatever I have, doesn't agitate me. It enriches my life. So when you have the charitable disposition. So the charitable disposition comes from the dispossessiveness. Please understand that. By understanding that everything is nothing but divinity expressing itself as this universe. So, therefore, it is equally yours and mine. So, there is no interest in taking more. There is no interest in taking others. And whatever you have, but also you understand, tera tujhko arpan kya lage mera, with that attitude. So he says you are rich by what you give. Because that's what you have. You are comfortable. You are able to be without it. Meaning you are not dependent. So then he says you may give wealth, service, feeling, knowledge. You only give what you are rich with, no? So if you are giving, means you are free from that. So you have got that knowledge. The spirit of giving provides you with the happiness you seek in the world. So happiness is to do with dispossessiveness. Please understand. A taker still feels limited and possessive. As a giver, doesn't have that possessive attitude. So therefore, he says, you don't understand this, you still seek, you keep begging, keep asking. So he says, people all over the world pray for success or progress, wealth or health, property or progeny. The list of desires and demands is endless. They do not realize the futility of such prayer. No sooner the spirit of asking, taking enters you, it destroys whatever little peace and happiness you possess. You know, when you, the moment you go begging, look at the body language itself. Look at the person who's gone to give, look at the person who's gone to take. What is the body language? The fellow who is taking, you know, a pitiable condition. The fellow who is giving, completely different body language. So that's all he says. You are the Supreme Self. You lack nothing. When you understand that you lack nothing, you are infinite, complete, why would you ask? So the very asking is because of your sense of incompleteness that has come from ignorance. Therefore he says, you gain the knowledge, then you will only be a giver. You can never be a taker. Not possible. You feel complete, you will never be a taker. Never be a taker in the sense you will never be a beggar. You know, there are situations where by taking you give. Now this is a little deep. There was a Swami. He was a very great renunciate. Lived a very simple life. And tremendous following he had, including the who's who of that state. So anyone who goes to visit him, and when they were leaving, taking his blessings, he'll say, give me 1 rupee. Give me 1 rupee. He is not going to build a house collecting that 1 rupee. From a multi-millionaire also, he has 1 rupee. 1 rupee. What is this? Yeah, this particular trait we didn't understand. It appears as if he was taking 1 rupee from them. But actually what he was doing is, he was encouraging the quality of giving in them. He doesn't want that 1 rupee. You know. So there are people who take with zero dispossessive attitude. There are people who give with absolute possessive attitude. They are not givers, they are takers. They are takers in the garb of givers. Whereas here this fellow is a giver in the garb of taker. Please understand the difference. So when somebody is coming and giving you emotion, you should be able to take it without any conditions. No, 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 I'm not a taker. I'm a giver. I'll only give. That means what? You're still having ego. An egoistic person cannot be a giver to that extent. Giving is not possible as long as you feel you are limited. Giving is possible only when you feel you are boundaryless, boundless. A sense of limitation will not allow you to give. You think about your future, what will happen, this thing, that thing. You know. So therefore, a person who thinks oneself to be this limited individual cannot be a giver. The person who understands that I am that infinite reality, truth, cannot but be a giver. Only be a giver. Because they understood that the kingdom of heaven lies within you. And he says, you are the monarch, no beggar. You need not ask for anything. You have everything. Now only to realize that, you then develop the spirit of charity, to share, to give. In fact, the more you give, the more you get. See, take the example of breathing. You know, you breathe out, then you will be able to breathe in. Supposing you say, no, 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 I'm not going to breathe out at all. I'll only be breathing in. Straight you will go and meet somebody in hell or heaven, depending upon your karma. You know, you have to breathe out to be able to breathe in. So, In life also it's like that. The life's quality improves when you develop this possessive attitude. The moment you don't develop the dispossessive attitude, you will lose the what do you call it? Happiness, quality. Continue, please.
There is a story of a sage who lived in total contentment, peace and bliss. Two gestures summed up his life. He gave and he was a picture of selflessness, with no like or dislike, no desire or expectation. Lord Shiva and consort Parvati, blessed, pleased with the sage's devotion, descended upon earth to bless him. The good man was then mending his torn clothes. He prostrated to the divine visitors. Shiva offered him a boon, to ask for anything he needed. The sage spoke with all devotion. My Lord, you have provided me with everything. There is nothing I lack that I may ask thee. Ironically, he had no possession and was living on alms. Upon Parvati's insistence, Shiva pressed him to choose a boon. The sage felt helpless. His eyes then fell upon the clothes he was stitching. He brightened up and asked, "My request is that the thread should follow the needle."
See, all this the story is trying to explain to us is that when you develop, move towards the self, you will start feeling more and more complete. There is no incompleteness in. There is no want. There is no need. I want this, I want that, there is nothing like that. You know, you will feel complete. You do not want anything. Because there is nothing lacking. You are full, paripurna. You know, in the second chapter of the Gita, Sri Krishna gives the example of ocean. Apurya manam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti advate. It says, like, you know, an ocean into which lots of water pours in, from which lot of water is taken away. But the ocean never feels incomplete. Similarly, when you reach the self, you will feel complete like that ocean. So the sage is like that. He summed up his life only with two words. Gave, forgave. Forgiving is giving at the mental level. Seeing from the other person's point of view and understanding, that is called forgiving. Forgiving is what? Putting yourself in other person's shoes and understanding from that angle, then you will not have any revenge attitude, hatred, nothing. So that is called giving. Similarly, giving at the mental level. So his life was just he gave, he forgave. In the academy, during karma time, we wear t-shirts and shorts and do some work. So, on the t-shirt, this particular line was, printed. He gave, he forgave. Another one was, ya pashyati sa pashyati. Whoever sees it, sees it. That is in the Gita. So, your life should be giving and forgiving. Giving at the physical level, material level, giving at the mental level. That is what the story is talking about. When you keep on evolving, you feel full. Out of fullness, what happens is you will only be a giver. You can never be a taker. But if out of incompleteness you give, then many times people do that as business. You know, I give, it will come back to me tomorrow. Then there is not giving, there is business. The real giving is possible only by a person who's conquered the ego, or to the extent who's conquered the ego, who's conquered the sense of incompleteness. Continue.
This is an example of the lives of enlightened souls. The scriptures have many such episodes which display their total helplessness when it comes to asking, receiving. They live a life of absolute fulfillment, desiring nothing, expecting nothing. Try to emulate their outstanding stature. Realize that nothing in the world can provide you with peace and happiness, and learn the art of giving. Take the position of a giver. You become a personification of joy and happiness. Practice this in the marketplace, in the street, at work, at home, everywhere. Be you governor or governed, employer or employee, husband or wife, parent or child, you should occupy the position of a bestower, never a petitioner. Think and act in the best interest of the other person. Live life with the attitude of aprevu after you. You then become the nucleus of happiness. That is the law. Follow this law and the complexion of the world changes. There is then purity, beauty and joy in life.
So, he's saying, if you have this attitude of after you, seeing from the other person's point of view, and not being just all the time just thinking about me, you'll be extremely, extremely happy. But if you go to the other end and start seeing everything from your end, me, then you'll be extremely unhappy. That is the law. I can't change it, you can't change it. When you say law, means we have to abide by the law. Otherwise, the result will come upon us. We have no choice. These are all observations in life which the scriptures give us. So, when you realize your fullness, and you rise above your little ego, little self, and start seeing from the other person's angle and what is good for that person when you do, you have that attitude, immediately you will see that you are happy, you are joyful. But on the contrary, if you haven't realized your completeness, and you are still asking, begging, then you will be in total mental agitation and suffering. You'll never be happy, how much of you get. It's impossible. So that's why he says, when you are giving up, you become the personification of joy and happiness. This is the law. Follow this law and the complexion of the world changes. If you are trying to change the world, all that we need to understand is first we have to change ourselves. That doesn't mean you don't do things to change the world. But the accent should be in changing oneself. Trying to change the world, not at the cost of one's own development. Continue.
Charity does not mean indiscriminate dispensation of wealth. The world comprises two types of people. The vast majority is far from being charitable. The rest indulge in unintelligent charity. Indiscriminate charity has resulted in a lot of misery. It has bred respectable beggars in society. True charity emanates from proper judgment of the intellect, not something that oozes out of a weak emotion of the mind. In its purest form, charity has the distinction of benefiting the donee as well, not just the donor.
So the donor and the donee both have to benefit. When you give, and if it's not coming out of satisfying your ego, it is coming out of fullness. It benefits you by giving you the sense of happiness, joy, contentment. And it also helps the other person to become independent. Otherwise, when you cater to their impulses, you are making them continue being dependent. So neither that person grows nor you grow. So both the receiver and the giver has to grow. Then only it's true charity. And that can only happen when there is buddhi involved in the expression of the child. So while it is important to have the attitude of giving, you need to understand that while it comes to expression, you need to use the buddhi and then express it, not blindly. Continue.
Victor Hugo, in his novel Les Miserables, highlights the benefaction that charity brings to Adoni. In the exceptional charity of a priest to a convict. The convict escapes from prison, sought shelter for a night. The priest obliged and gave him supper and a bed to sleep. The convict silently accepted the good man's hospitality. In the middle of the night, he decamped with the silver plates of the house. The next morning, he was brought in by the police who had caught him. The priest feigned surprise and embarrassed the policeman. "Why did you harass him? I gifted the plates to him last night." The policeman apologized and left. The convict was astounded. Crown it all, the priest picked up two solid silver candlestick stands from his desk and gave them to the convict with these resounding words of wisdom. "Remember, life is to give, not to take." The convict took them and departed. Thence he was transformed into a divine person. He became a symbol of service and sacrifice. Such would be the outcome of true charity.
So the priest, knowing very well that the fellow has done this crime, he looked at him and he understood that some situation has made him do this, and then he gave him two more candlesticks made of silver and told him, "Life is to give, not to take." That giving makes that person become a karmayogi. In the story, the fellow takes the two candlesticks made of silver given by the priest and then starts industry. He gives jobs to a lot of people. You know, so when you give, it will make that person rise. If you use your intellect. Don't use your intellect and then just give emotionally. Then, you know, it only makes that person become more and more dependent. So therefore, he gives the story and says, remember, life is to give, not to take. Continue, one more time.
Likewise, the donor is blessed with the effect of charity. Sacrifice is a synonym for success. So is charity for prosperity. As Swami Ramtirtha proclaims, the way to gain anything is to lose it. The more you run after wealth, the more it recedes. The more you crave for it, the more it eludes you. Leave it alone, it follows you. Work dispassionately, the reward of work courts you.
So this is a very interesting concept. The way to gain anything is to lose it. So we'll talk about it in detail in the next class. But think about this, you know, we meet next time. Why Swami Ramtirtha is saying so? Why does he say that the way to gain anything is to lose it? Lose the attachment to it. What happens when we lose the attachment? How does it contribute for success? Like he says, you know, sacrifice is synonym for success. All this you think about it. Next week we'll deal with it in detail. Let's conclude. Om Purnamada Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmanava Prakrute Swabhava Karomi Yadyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanaye Samarpayami.
Hari Om Guruji.
Thank you Guruji.